We have a great parasha. We're studying parasha Toledot. Of course, Toledot is discussing the birth of the children of Yitzhak, Esav and Yaakov. The Torah tells us, "Vayigdelu ha-ne'arim." So they grew up. Some say they became bar mitzvah, some say they became 15 years old. Vayhi Esav ish yodei asayid ish sadeh. So the pasuk says that Esav was a man that knows sayid, a man that's involved in trapping. Ish yodei asayid. He's a trapper, or we would say. So the Torah tells us that Esav was a hunter. Ish yodei asayid ish sadeh. Rashi comes along over here and says a hiddush. He writes, yodei asayid, that not only did he know how to trap and hunt animals, but he trapped his father. Rashi writes, latzud ulramot et aviv. He had a very slick tongue, and he had a very tricky mouth. And with that mouth of his, he was able to deceive or decept Yitzhak Avinu. That she says, how did he deceive him? V'sho'alo, he would say, Abba, he'ach me'asrin et ha'melach ve'et ha'tevin. He would ask him a question. He would say, my father, there's a law of ma'aser. You have to give 10% of your product to the Levi. So he would say, what about straw? Tevin. Now the law is you don't have to give 10% on straw. Straw is the food of animals. But Esav would make it as if he's very, very super religious, super pious. And he would ask his father, Dad, what about taking ma'aser on straw? And Yitzhak would say, no, the straw, this is according to no opinions do you have to take on straw. And then he would say, what about salt? He'ach me'asrin et ha-melach. And Rashi writes on this, Kasavur aviv, his father thought, Yitzhak thought, shehu medagdek b'mitzvot. He thought he was a medagdek. Medagdek means that he's particular, that he's very, very precise in the mitzvot. And the farthest thing from the truth, Esav was a rasha, but he was able to trick his father. So that she understands what it says, ki sayid befiv, the trapping was in his mouth, meaning in his tongue. Now, that's not the simple explanation of the pasuk. The pasuk says that Yitzhak loved Esav, ki sayid befiv, because he would provide to his father food for his mouth. Kitzayid befiv shel Yitzhak. That means Yitzhak Avinu Alav Hashem would rely on Esav for hunting. So because he brought him food, kitzayid befiv. But for some reason, Rashi goes out of his way and learns, no, kitzayid befiv, it's not talking about the tzayid and the pif of Yitzhak, but kitzayid befiv shel Esav. Esav's mouth has entrappings, and he would entrap his father. I wanted to know, before we go further, how did Rashi know to take this pasuk out of its natural understanding? I saw in the Hiddushim, Amma'or Sheba Torah, these Hiddushim that was said over by the previous Rebbe from Lubavitch. So he writes, Vahi Esav ish yodei asayid ish sadeh. What do you say, Sammy? Any luck? No, I changed the battery. I changed it. I just changed it. There, no, it's brand new. Tricky, huh? Okay. Okay. Play with it. There's the buttons over there. I didn't understand them. It's hard enough to figure this out. So he says over here, the Rebbe, that if the pasuk was coming to tell us that Esav was just a hunter, the pasuk should say like this: Vahi Esav ish sadeh, because first you go into the field, and after you go into the field, then you do tzayid. the field comes before the tzayid. You have to go to the field in order to trap. But here the pasuk writes it backwards. The pasuk says, "Vahi esav ish yodeya tzayid ish sadeh." So the fact that it mentions the trapping before it mentions the field, so therefore Rashi, he says, understood that must be this trapping is a trapping that's done not in the sadeh. Where is a trapping done not in the sadeh? That's the trapping that he does by asking his father these, sounding religious questions in order to get his father to think that he's religious. Now, the question over here is obvious. The question over here is, how is it possible that Yitzhak Avinu can like Esav? I mean, we all know from when we're young, Esav is the Rasha. God forbid to think for a minute that Yitzhak Avinu was some sort of naive, God forbid, old man, he was blind, so therefore he gets fooled easily. We have to remember we're talking about Yitzhak Avinu. There's only three avot ever in the history of the world. These are the greatest men that ever lived. They were prophets. This is the Baal Akedat Yitzhak. This is the one that had a status of a living human sacrifice, and he was not allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael. Yitzhak Avinu Alav HaShalom, to come along and say that, in a very childish way or immature way to think that, his son was a good talker and a good, he was glib, and he had a good way with the words, and therefore he was able to fool Yitzhak. It's not so easy to fool the tzaddikim, let alone the avot. So how is it possible that this trick happened? And I think the questions that he asked, are these coincidental questions? Ketzad me'asirin et ha-teven ve'ketzad me'asirin et ha-melach? Why did he choose these questions? Where did these questions come from? Later on, we're going to see something else. Bezat Hashem will get to it. At the end of the parasha, Yitzhak Avinu is going to give out the blessings. Of course, Esav would come in to get the blessing that he thought he deserved it. And then in the interim, he would walk out to go get some food for his father, and Yaakov would come in. And if you remember, when Yaakov came in, his mother dressed him up like Esav. He was wearing a costume. He was wearing an Esav costume. And he received the blessings dressed like Esav. Always wondered, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he gave the blessings to the one that deserved them, Yaakov. Why does he have to receive them in such a way? Why does he have to receive the blessings when he's wearing Esav's clothes? Why couldn't God orchestrate it like it should have been? Let Yitzhak Avinu tell Esav, you're a Rasha, Yaakov, you're a Tzaddik, and give him the blessings like a normal human being. But to do it in such a dramatic or deceptive way, you have to question, what was the Kavanah, maybe, of God, of the Boreh, why he orchestrated in such a way? In order to begin this, there's a great rabbi called Rabbeinu Ari. Rabbeinu Ari had many students that were Mekubarim. Of course, the famed student was Rav Chaim Vital. And Rav Chaim Vital wrote different ideas that he heard from his master, the Mekubal Rabbeinu Ari. And he wrote them in many books. One of those books is called the Sefer of Likutei HaAri. These are tidbits of Hiddushim that the Ari would say over. What I'm quoting you now is in the Ari's interpretation to the book of Ovadiah. And he says over here something incredible. He writes that, if you remember, the way Esav dies in a very dramatic way. He was at the Ma'arat HaMachpelah, at the funeral of his brother, when they were burying Yaakov, and he was creating a commotion. And if you remember, one of the grandchildren of Yaakov, Hoshim ben Dan, he was deaf, but he was able to see very well, and he saw that his uncle Esav was creating interruption to this funeral ceremony, procession. He felt it was disrespectful. If you remember, what he did is he picked up a club, like a samurai, and he... Okay, it's better without it. Better without it. Well, he's getting it. He's getting it. Okay, guys. Yozichut, good ladies. Yozichut. I can't tell you. We spent so much time last week fixing the system. No, but it works all week long. That's an amazing thing. So in any event, he asks. So he took the club, Hoshim Ben Dan, and he samurai'd Esav's head off, and it says Esav's head rolled, and the tradition is that it rolled into the Ma'arat Machpelah, although his body did not. So the Arizal wants to know what zechut did Esav have that his head should be buried in Ma'arat Machpelah. It's a zechut. What did he have in his head? He had to have something in his head. So he writes that there's certain neshamot that came from Esav. These neshamot were great neshamot. They came from Esav because they were converts. And any convert obviously starts off from Esav before he, you know, crosses the border. And Esav had these neshamot, they were high neshamot, and the Arizal says they were in the gar. Gar means in the top part of Esav. That's where the neshamot were resting. Now, of course, these neshamot eventually would leave Esav and join, for example, our side, Yaakov. But in the interim, the head of Esav had kedusha in it. So the Arizal says, who was there? So he right now, I'm quoting, and he says, Hine Esav, Hayu Nitzotze Kedusha Begar Shelo. There were sparks of Kedusha, holy Neshamot, in his gar, in the head. Velachen Keshahatach Hoshim Rosho, that's why when Hoshim chopped his head off, the head rolled to the Ma'arat HaMachpelah. V'nikbar im Yitzhak, ki ha-kidusha hayta b'rosho bilvad. The kidusha b'Esav was in his head. So he writes, u'me-ha-kidusha hi, from that kidusha, the nitzotzot of the sparks of kidusha in his head, yatzu gerim l'ashei Yisrael. The leaders of the rabbinical world in the times of the Tanaim of the Mishnah, and they are Shemaya and Avtalion are the rabbis of Hillel and Shammai. Hillel and Shammai were not converts, but their rabbis were Shemaya and Avtalion. V'Rabbi Meir, that's Rabbi Meir Balanes. Rabbi Meir came from a family of converts, and then he says V'Rabbi Akiva, as well as the great sage, also descended from converts, Rabbi Akiva. So according to this, the Arizal is explaining that that's what it means that Esav or Yitzhak liked Esav. How could he like Esav? Because Yitzhak sensed that there was something in Esav that was very kadosh. Yitzhak was a Sadiq. He was able to be attracted to the head of Esav. He sensed that there's neshamot in Esav that will change Klal Yisrael. Shemayan Avtalion are the greatest Tanaim. Rabbi Meir, which is the great Tana of the Mishnah, and of course Rabbi Akiva, who's the rabbi of all. So Yitzhak Avinu felt that these Sadiqim were coming from him, and therefore he had an attraction to him. There's a great rabbi that's called Me'or Enayim. The Sefer Me'or Enayim then adds, and he says, and I quote, "Shneshamot kedoshot v'gedolot hayu kelulin bo be'esav, v'ze she'amru al pasuk ki tzayid befiv." Tzayid befiv, he was able to trap his father with his mouth. Shaya Shoel Abba Ech Ma'asrin Et Tevin. That, how do you take Ma'asir from the Tevin?
So he says, "Umashikatuf tzayid befiv." Rotze lomar tzayid haneshamot hakedoshot shayu melubashin befiv,
which means when Esav would talk and ask those questions, as we'll see immediately, in those questions, Yitzhak did not hear what you heard. You heard, how do you take ma'aser on straw? He heard Rabbi Akiva talking. And he heard a very deep question. And he heard a very pious question. And the attraction that Yitzhak had to Esav, according to the Mor Enayim, was not to Esav proper. He knew Esav was a Rasha. But he heard the echo of a great rabbi coming through his voice, Ki Tzayid Befiv. It's like a ventriloquist. The ventriloquist, you know, he doesn't open up his mouth and you hear a voice coming out. Here Esav had a voice of a big tzaddik. Now, I'm not sure Esav knew what he was saying and where that question was coming from. But there is no doubt, Yitzhak Avinu, when he heard this question, he heard greatness. And I continue. He says, "Shehayu melubashim b'fiv, hayu medaberim memenu mepiv, otan neshamot, b'sha'a shaya medaberim Yitzhak. Ubiyichud, especially, neshmat Rabbi Akiva." Oh. He says, while Yitzhak Avinu heard a lot of holiness, but the main voice that he heard coming out of Esav's mouth was Rabbi Akiva. So it comes out according to this, that Yitzhak Avinu was not naive at all. As a matter of fact, he was so great that he was able to see things and hear things in Esav that maybe Esav himself didn't know what he had. And certainly nobody else. And it's because of the tzayid befiv, that attraction that Esav had in his mouth from those questions he heard Tanaim talking. How? So he says the following. There was a famous story when Rabbi Akiva got married. Rabbi Akiva married a girl by the name of Rachel. She was a tzaddiket. She was the daughter of a magnate, a very wealthy man, Kalba Savua. At the time Rabbi Akiva got married, he was an Ama'aris. Ama'aris means he was an ignoramus. He wasn't even fluent with the 22 letters of Aleph Bet. Kalba Savua, understandably, did not want such a son-in-law for his daughter. His daughter was tzaddiket. So he told his daughter, if you marry this man, you're out of the will. I'm not giving you a dowry. I'm not giving you money. I'm not going to support you. You're on your own. And Rabbi Akiva was a po'el. He was a worker. He didn't have any money himself. Amazingly, this girl had intuition. And she was able to see something in Rabbi Akiva that most people did not see. Clearly her father didn't see it. But she said, fine, I'm not interested in your wealth. I'm marrying this Akiva. It wasn't Rabbi Akiva. It was Akiva ben Yosef. She marries. They didn't go to honeymoons. That wasn't a Jewish thing. I still don't think it's such a Jewish thing. Although they went on a vacation. They went somewhere after they got married, it says. And they're in a small place, in a hut somewhere, and they're sleeping on the floor. And it says they didn't have a mattress in that hotel that they went to, and they're sleeping on straw. It says Rabbi Akiva took some straw and he laid it on the ground, and that's where they're lying. Understandably, his wife now started to feel, what does it mean to marry this man? You know, before they were married, the dream. Now she's sleeping on the floor. And now she thinks, maybe my father was right. Look what happens over there. Marry this man. I'm an artist. He doesn't know Aleph Bet. And he doesn't even have money for a bed. So she started to get a little upset and sad. Rabbi Akiva doesn't know what to do. How's he going to console her? All of a sudden, somebody knocks on the door. And somebody knocks and says, please, we're staying in the next room over here. Oh, and my wife is about to give birth. We don't even have straw in order for us to lie down on. Wow, I see. You have straw. So now Rabbi Akiva says to his wife, you see, Baruch Hashem, there's some people don't even have straw. We're better off. And the Gemara says that that was Eliyahu HaNavi. There was no neighbor. Eliyahu HaNavi came with this whole story in order to make Rabbi Akiva's wife feel good. That's the way we always learned the story. However, he adds one point that I never made, but it has to be true what he's saying, because it makes a lot of sense. He said, so what do you think Rabbi Akiva did? Did he just tell his wife, you see, we're better off than that guy, and then slammed the door in his face? No, he must have said what a normal person would do, please, your wife is giving birth, you don't have straw, take some of our straw. So he must have given him the straw in order to help. That's a classic example of taking ma'aser on tevin. That's taking ma'aser on tevin. So all of a sudden, Rabbi Akiva comes to his father, and Rabbi Akiva, Esav, but it's not Esav, he hears Rabbi Akiva, Kitzayid Befiv, these neshamot were in the head of Esav, he had a good head, and all of a sudden he says, Pap, Kesad Ma'asin et Tevin. Yitzhak Aminu says, Yishtabach Shem, look at this Sadiq, he's going to give Ma'aser of Tevin, in order to alleviate the pain of somebody else, he's going to be married to a tzaddeket, and he's going to become a great Talmid Chacham with such Mesirut Nefesh. So he got excited from this. This is a novel way of hearing the question. I want you to hear the words of Me'od Einayim. He says, V'noda, ki Rabbi Akiva nasa b'tchilat bat kalba savua. He married the daughter of kalba savua. V'hidiro mimenu. And he excluded him and her from the estate. Vayushuchvim al tevin. They were sleeping on straw. Uba Eliyahu zachulatov. Vedmelik gavra anya. And he appeared like a poor person. Ubikesh mehem tevin. Beomro, he said, sheishto yalda. This is my wife gave birth. Vesirichal vishkav al tevin. Venatan lo Rabbi Akiva tevin. And he gave it. Vezumi dat tova meod. All this story, Yitzhak Avinu already saw it 1,000 years before it ever happened. Ki b'sha'at diburo imo haya omer lo, rotze lomar haya medaber imo oto nitzotz ha-kadosh. That holy spark was talking. Ketzad ma'asim et ha-tevin. Well, if that's the case, he asked him another question. Kesad me'asin et ha-melach. Well, what did he hear when he said that? You know, once already you see this perush of the Me'od Einayim, he only explains the tevin question. But there was a second question. There was a question of melach. Yesterday we had Rabbi Friedman in the synagogue, and he made me aware of a Gemara in Eruvin on page 41. Listen to a Gemara. Gemara tells a story of a case where Tisha B'Av, the fast day, falls out on a Friday. Now, that cannot happen anymore, based on the way the calendar works out. But in the olden days, Tisha B'Av was able to fall out, not only on Shabbat, which that it does, but it's able to fall out even on Friday. So the Gemara here is discussing, how do you fast on a Friday? Meaning, do you fast up until Shabbat, or are you allowed to break the fast a little before Shabbat so you don't go into Shabbat suffering and fasting? That's the Gemara's discussion. I'll read you a bit. The Gemara here says, "Haliyot Tisha B'Av be'erev Shabbat." If Tisha B'Av comes out on erev Shabbat, "Mivim lo kabetza ve'ochel." Right before Shabbat, they bring them an egg to eat. So he doesn't go into Shabbat suffering. So right before sunset, they bring an egg to break the fast. Gemara tells a story. Tanya, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Pam Achat Ayu Yoshvim Lefnei Rabbi Akiva. One time we were sitting in front of Rabbi Akiva. V'tish'a be'av shechal liyot be'erev Shabbat haya. And it was that case. It was a tish'a be'av of a Friday. And they brought from the rabbi a hard-boiled egg. Vigam'a. And he swallowed it. Ve'lo she'aya ta'evla. Not that he was hungry. Ela la'ra'ot la'talmidim halakha. He wanted to show the talmidim a halakha. Now, we think that the halakha he was trying to show was that you're allowed to eat before Shabbat, even though it's the Tisha B'Av. That's what we think the halakha is. Tosfot comes along and says, the commentator Tosfot, and says, no, it was they misunderstood what he was trying to teach. It says, at this moment, Rabbi Akiva was sick. He was a chole. And he needed to eat because a chole is allowed to eat if he's in sakana on a fast day. Tosfot says, really, you have to fast until sunset. But why did Rabbi Akiva eat? In order to alleviate the sakana that he was in. And what did they give him to eat? An egg. Now the Gemara says, however, when they gave him the egg, he ate it. Belo melach. He did not put salt on it. Now, that's a standard procedure. You know, an egg is bland. They put salt on it to give it a little seasoning, to give it a little ta'am. Why didn't Rabbi Akiva put salt? After all, he was allowed to eat. He was sick, Tosfot says. Once a person is sick, there's no rules. And especially, it was already close to sunset. So the Mefarshim say, you know why he didn't want to eat the salt? Because albeit it was still Tisha B'Av. And he didn't want to have Hana'ah. He didn't want to enjoy the egg. So the rabbis told him, you can eat it. He said, eat it, don't put any salt. Why do you have to suffer to be Akiva? Even though I'm allowed to eat, I have to remind myself, even when I'm eating with a heter, that it's still Tisha B'Av today. Therefore, you see the greatness of the sensitivity that he deprived himself of the salt. So now he turns to his father, Esav, 1,000 years before, and he says, Pa, Abba, he'ach me'asrin et ha-melach. What is the proper way to separate the salt? Yitzchak Avinu saw already that Rabbi Akiva is going to come along and separate himself from the salt in order to show sensitivity for the Churban Beit HaMikdash. So when you hear these two questions, this already did not fool Yitzhak at all. On the contrary, we were fooled by the questions. If anybody got fooled by these two questions, it's us. Because we always thought, he fooled his father into some, you know, religious entrappings. But the truth of the matter is, he heard Rabbi Akiva talking, and who cannot be impressed? He saw already a futurama of these events that are going to be. Now, if that's the case, we might even go a little further. I was wondering, there were so many rabbis in Esav, Rabbi Meir, Shemaya, Avtalion, Rabbi Akiva, they had a whole yeshiva in the. Why did Yitzhak only hear Rabbi Akiva? Out of all the rabbis that were resonating from the mouth of Esav, the Me'or Enayim says, especially he heard Rabbi Akiva. The Lashon of the Me'or Enayim again was, שהיו מלובשים בפיו, היו מדברים ממנו מפיו אותן נשמות בשעת שהיה מדבר עם יצחק. ובייחוד נשמת רבי עקיבא. Why did he hear רבי עקיבא? You ever hear the rule of resonance? Resonance is when things resonate. When two sounds are on the same frequency, so they hum because they're connected to each other. Sometimes when a rabbi says something, and you're going through a certain situation, and the rabbi's words, they connect to you. So you say, Rabbi, what you said today resonated with me, because you're on the same frequency of the topic that's being said. So that's a scientific concept called resonance. That when two people have something that is similar, so they resonate. The Ramban writes, Ma'ase avot siman lebanim. It's the Ramban that we've mentioned many times. Ma'ase avot siman lebanim means that whatever the avot would accomplish in their personal lives, they would shape and form and direct the history of Bnei Yisrael. That means a lot of the things that we have as traits of the Jewish people, we inherited that from the successes of Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. So whenever you read a story about the Avot, you always have to ask, learn it on two levels. You have to say, first, what happened to them, and how did it affect us? That's why the stories in Sefer Bereshit are very, very significant. You cannot just learn it as historical, what happened. You have to then say, well, based on what happened, what is happening? How did this event shape our lives? And the Meshech Chochmah over here, in last week's parasha, the Me'ir Simcha Kohen B'Divinsk, he writes that something happened to Klal Yisrael at the time of Akedat Yitzhak. When Yitzhak Avinu was able, without any hesitation, to sacrifice, or be willing to sacrifice his life for God, he tells his father, bind me tight so I don't move, because I don't want to render the Korban invalid. And he extends his neck, and he has no bad thoughts. Because if he would have had a bad thought, then it would have compromised the Korban, and it would not have been brought to Shem Shamayim. The Mishnah Chumash says the Korban was brought with the most perfect intent, both by the Avraham and Yitzhak. What did that do? He says, "Ki behimasero Yitzhak et nafsho al kiddush shemo yitbarach," by sacrificing his life. Umeaz v'hala, from that day on, hukba was established. Leteva kayam, it became a dominant gene. Beumah Yisraelit, and the Jewish people, lehimashech ahar ratzon ha'ashkacha me'omek ha'lev. ולמסור נפשם ורוחם ומעודם על קידוש שמו יתברך. He says, the Jews would become more easy for them to give their lives up for God. And he goes on to say, like they have done in the 14th and the 15th and the 16th centuries, that Jews throughout the generations, but specifically in those times, whether it's the Jews in Spain, or whether it's the Jews in Eastern Europe, where they were pogromed and they were, you know, tortured, only because they were Jewish. And most of them gave up their lives without questioning. And they died in Spain when they said, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, in order not to accept upon themselves any forms of Avodah Zarah. And this became a Jewish trait, that Jews die for their religion. And we don't kill people for our religion. But if we're going to be the victims of it, the Jew will die proudly for his religion before he gives it up. So the Meshech Chokhmah says, where did we get that from? That's from Yitzhak Avinu. Anytime you see Mesirut Nefesh in Klal Yisrael, that's Yitzhak Avinu. I think I must have told you the famous story of Hannah and the seven children. There was a lady, Hannah, she was a righteous woman. She had seven kids. And the king came along and said, we want your children to bow down to idols. She said, go, try, you'll see, they won't listen. And the first one, they said, bow, we're going to kill you. And he didn't want to listen, and they killed him. The second one says, I believe in one God, and they killed him. And so on and so forth. They got to the seventh one, and the king says, listen, I know you're not going to bow down to idols, but at least so I save face, I'm going to drop my ring. You pick up the ring, but it looked like you're bowing down to the idol. He said, I'm not allowed to do that because it looks like a sin, and therefore you can kill me also. And sure enough, the seventh son of Hannah, in front of her, in front of her mother. So before she passed, before the seventh one got murdered, Hannah went to the seventh son and said, you're going to give your life up for Kiddush Hashem, I'm proud of you. You're going to go upstairs, you're going to see Yitzhak Avinu. I want you to go to Yitzhak, give him a message from Hannah. So, okay, mom, what message have you, Yitzhak Avinu? Go tell him that you sacrificed one son. Tell him that I did seven. I once said this derash when I was traveling with Rav Matityahu Solomon. After I said the derash, he said, this is a proper derash. This is a good explanation. What's the explanation? I said, what do you mean? She had nothing better to do, Hannah? Go, what do you want from Yitzhak Avinu? Go tell him, I'm better than you seven times. So Yitzhak will say, good luck to you. I didn't say anything, you're not good. You're also good. Everybody's good. I did one, you did seven. So you're better than me. Well, stop just to needle Yitzhak Avinu to go out of your way and tell Yitzhak I'm better than you by seven. So Chas v'Shalom, she wasn't saying that. She was saying like this. She saw seven of her children get murdered in front of Al Kiddush Hashem. She said to herself, where does a Jewish mother get this strength? Where do I get the strength from of Mesirut Nefesh to see this happen to my children and still be able to function and still be able to believe in God? She said, where do I get this from? You need to have a gene inside of you that's able to tolerate this. Where did this muscle come from? So she went back in history and she said, must be this comes from the Akedat Yitzhak. That on that day that Yitzhak Avinu sacrificed his son, he put that energy into every single Jewish mother and every single Jewish father, that even though things will happen to their children, that they're able to accept it and they're able to move on. And therefore she said, go tell Yitzhak Avinu the following. Because he was able to sacrifice one, I was able to do seven. Go thank him. Go give Yitzhak Hakarat HaTov. Go tell Yitzhak Avinu, I know where it came from over here, that my strength is actually an inherited strength. It's not something that was innate. It was not something that was natural. It was something that was inherited to me by a Yerusha of Avotenu HaKedoshim. That's Yitzhak Avinu's contribution. You know, each one of the Avot contributed. Yitzhak's contribution to Klal Yisrael is Mesirut Nefesh. Anytime you see a Jew sacrifice, whether he gives his life up for God, or he lives b'mesirut nefesh, in such cases like Hannah, that already comes from Yitzhak. I saw a great Rabbeinu Bahya. Rabbeinu Bahya in Parashat Ve'et Hanan. We say it in the Kiryat Shema every day. Ve'avta et Adonai Elohecha. Bechol levavecha, ubchol nafshecha, ubchol me'odecha. What does it mean? B'chol levavecha, you have to serve God with all your heart. B'chol nafshecha, with all of your, with your life. B'chol me'odecha means with all of your assets. Rabbeinu Bahya makes a point. He says there's three things here. These three things, levavecha, nafshecha, me'odecha, corresponds Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. He says each one of these items we inherited from one of the Avot. I quote, when he says, Bechol levavecha, keneged Avraham, she'ahav HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Bechol levavo. He loved God with all his heart. V'mshicha levavot le'emunato. It was Avraham that went around doing chesed out of love, bringing the people's heart back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So when a person says that you have to love God, Bechol levavecha, meaning you have to love God through a heartfelt service, which is the service of Avraham Avinu, behesed, where he went around giving out food in order to bring the people back to monotheism. Bechol levavecha is Avraham. Well, who do you think Bechol nafshecha is? Good guess. So he says, Bechol nafshecha, keneged Yitzhak, shemasar nafsho al gabei mizbeach. So when Jews are able to give their lives up for God, you got that from Yitzhak. Bechol meodecha, keneged Yaakov, shefrish ma'aser mikol mamono. We're going to read in the next week's parasha, Yaakov would make a vow. Kol asher titenli, whatever you give me, God, aser aserenu lach. I'll give it back to you. And then we're going to read that whatever he made in Lavan's house, he gave it to Esav to buy the Ma'arat HaMachpelah. To Yaakov, you know, money didn't mean anything to him. He gave all his money away for the Kedusha. So therefore, b'chol levavecha keneged Abraham, u'b'chol nafshecha keneged Yitzhak. Very good. That's Yitzhak Avinu's contribution. Now listen to a famous story in the Gemara Berachot. The Gemara says over here on page 61, you know the story. B'sha'a she'otziu et Rabbi Akiva lahariga. They were taking out Rabbi Akiva, the Romans, in order to brutally murder him. He was one of the 10 martyrs. Asara Rugim Malchut. Zman Kiryat Shema Haya. It was the time of Shema.
והיו סורקין את בשרו במסריקות של בזל.
They took an iron rake that was hot and they started to comb the holy flesh of Rabbi Akiva.
והיה מקבל עליו עול מלכות שמיים.
And what was he doing? He was oblivious to whatever they were doing to him. And he's reading the Shema.
אמרו לו תלמידיו, רבנו, עד כאן.
Even now you're saying the Shema. Even now, which means Rabbi Akiva was having kavanah to say the Shema. They said, just let yourself die. Even now you're preserving your kavanah for the Shema.
He says, אמר להם, כל ימי הייתי מצטער על פסוק זה.
Every day I agonized on this pasuk.
Which pasuk? ובכל נפשך.
When I read the pasuk in Shema, ובכל נפשך,
I said to myself, אפילו נותן את נשמתך. This means you have to serve God even if he takes your life. אמרתי, I said, מתי יבוא לידי וקיימנו?
When is this test going to come to me so I can fulfill it?
ועכשיו, שבא לידי, לא אקיימנו.
And now that it's here, you don't want me to fill it with the Kavanah. That means Rabbi Akiva, when he said Kiryat Shema every day, which words was he connected to?
B'chol nafshecha, u'b'chol nafshecha.
All my life, I'm focused on these two words, u'b'chol nafshecha, and now God put me in this position. And now I'm not going to fulfill it. Ladies, the theory that I want to say is the theory of resonance. Who is the one that brought the midah of Bechon Nafshecha into the world? Yitzhak Avinu. Who inherited it? Rabbi Akiva. And therefore, Hazak Baruch. And therefore, when Esav is talking, the Me'or Enayim says, many tzaddikim are coming out of his mouth. But the B, Yitzhak Avinu, resonates with the words of Rabbi Akiva. Because since Rabbi Akiva and Yitzhak have something in common, both had Mesirut Nefesh. Yitzhak would be the founder of Mesirut Nefesh. He would be the first gene that would be created. And Rabbi Akiva would be the child that inherited. And both fulfilled Ubkom Nafshecha. Yitzhak Avinu fulfilled it in principle. Rabbi Akiva, actually, what Yitzhak Avinu didn't finish, Rabbi Akiva would finish. That means the end of Akedat Yitzhak is at the time of Rabbi Akiva, because Yitzhak got saved from the Mizbeah. But Rabbi Akiva didn't get so lucky. But on the contrary, Rabbi Akiva was only able to go all the way because of the pure Kavanah of Yitzhak Avinu. So when Esav, back to our Esav, ladies, don't get me wrong, I didn't come over here to whitewash Esav. Esav's Rasha. As all the rabbi said today, Esav is Rabbi Akiva. I didn't say that. Chas v'shalom. Not saying that at all. Esav is a Rasha, but he had the tzotzot of Kedusha that were the ultimate future Gerim, and that was Befiv. So therefore, this is what he heard. He heard this connection. Finally, I'd like to say yet a deeper interpretation of what was happening here. There's a big argument in the Talmud between two rabbis, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. It's important that you know this argument. It's mentioned all the time in all the holy books. You know, there's certain arguments in the Talmud that are essential that you know them, because the rabbis always go back to these arguments to figure out who's right and what are the two sides. The Gemara that I'm telling you now is in Kiddushin. It's on page 36. The Gemara over there is discussing like this. What is the status of the Jewish people when they're fulfilling the will of God? So everybody says, when they're fulfilling the will of God, they're called Banim. They're called the children of God. No argument on that. God calls us his children. The Goyim are not the children of God. They have a different classification. When God took us out of Egypt, he told Moshe Rabbeinu, go tell Paro, Bini Bechori Yisrael. You are starting with my firstborn son, And measure for measure, beware your firstborn sons are going to be in trouble because you started with my firstborn son. God takes it personal. As a father, he said, this is my son you went after. And therefore, beware. That's a father protecting his child. So nobody argues when the Jewish people are fulfilling the divine order. Banim. The argument over here is, but what if they're not osim risono shel makom? What if they're not? The Jews are not always obedient. Sometimes the Jew does things that he's not supposed to do. So the Biyuda says, well, in that case over there, he's not a ben. He loses his status of ben. He loses it. He's not a ben. Wow, so the Biyuda says that status of ben fluctuates. It's only when the child is behaving. But if he misbehaves, God says, you're not my son, I'm not your father, and he loses that benefit. Whatever the benefit of a father is to a son, whether it's mercy, whether it's a courtesy, whether it's all sorts of benefits, you lose it. Then it's much more severe. Comes a rabbi called the Bimeir, and the Bimeir says, you're wrong, that the Jewish people are called Banim, even when they're disobedient. And he proves it from Pesukim. He says in the end of Devarim, it says, Banim Mashchitim. God calls us destructive children. So he says, even though we're Mashchitim, we're called Banim. Then he brought another Pasuk. It said, Banim Lo Imun Bam. The children that have no faith. So, even though we have no faith, we're called Banim. Big argument. You wouldn't know this because you don't learn the Talmud, but I do. And in the Talmud lessons, we learn that whenever you have an argument between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, halakha ki Rabbi Yehuda, that's the rule. Halakha ki Rabbi Yehuda. That's, ladies, I'm sorry to tell you, that's the rule. Halakha ki, it happens 99.999% of the time. Halakha ki Rabbi Yehuda. Comes a great rabbi called the Rashba, is one of the Rishonim. He's, I know the rule, and this is the one exception to the rule that the halakha follows, Rabbi Meir. Why? Because he wrote Pesukim. He backed it up. If it's a straight up argument, okay, then we'll take Rabbi Meir, but he has proof, he verified it with Pesukim. Now that's a big thing that Rashba said. Halakha can Rabbi Meir, that what? A Jew could never lose his status of Banim. Obedient, yes. Even disobedient, doesn't matter. Banim atem la'Hashem. Period. There's no, like we say in the prayers in the morning, you say, the Ashkenazim say, Ahavat Rabba. We say, Ahavat Olam Ahavtanu. That the love of God is an eternal love. Eternal love means it's not dependent. It's not dependent on anything. Of course, we have to be observant. And there's punishment. That does not mean that. But we can never become so far gone that we lose that. At least according to Rabbi Meir. Now I need to tell you something. Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda were students of the same rabbi. I'll tell you the story. Rabbi Akiva had a yeshiva with 24,000 students. That yeshiva, unfortunately, perished, all of them. Rabbi Akiva, instead of going into retirement, he opened up a second yeshiva, and the second yeshiva of Rabbi Akiva had 5 students. And he had, listen, amazing story, he had more success in the second yeshiva of 5 than he did of the yeshiva of 24,000. All the Torah that we have today comes from those 5 students. Whereas we have no Torah from the 24,000. That's amazing hashkaha. Anyway, two of the 5 students of Rabbi Akiva was Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. They both were students of Rabbi Akiva. So I asked a simple question. What did Rabbi Akiva say on this machloket? I mean, what does your Rebbe say? It's a fundamental question. They must have heard what Rabbi Akiva's opinion was. So there's a Gemara in Baba Batra. page 10. The Gemara over there talks about a conversation that took place between a Roman prince or officer by the name of Turnus Rufus. It's an odd name. And Rabbi Akiva. Turnus Rufus said, why do you give charity to the poor people? That's his question to Rabbi Akiva. What are you talking about? We give charity to the mitzvah, to help the poor, to help the needy. So Turnus Rufus says, you're wrong, Rabbi Akiva. That's not a good thing what you're doing. And he gives a parable. He says, imagine a king would take one of his subjects and banish him. Put him in jail. And he wants him to suffer. And then one of the people in the country goes and sneaks and feeds the prisoner. The king would kill him. He says, who made these people poor? God. So who are you to come along and feed them? That's Turnus Rufus. If the king wants them to be poor, that's the king's will. You're going to go along now and alleviate what the king doesn't want? How is Rabbi Akiva going to answer this? He says, Turnus Rufus, you're smart, but you're not so smart. Can I say the same example that you gave, but I want to just adjust it with one tweak. And that one tweak changes the whole mashal. He says, imagine you have a father, and the father gets angry at his son. And he banishes his son, and he puts him in a prison, and he says, nobody feed him. And now the child is starving, and the child is hungry, and the child is famished, and somebody sees their kid, and he goes and he feeds him. The father's going to be happy, because it's his son. The father said it in anger, but he doesn't want to see his son perish. He says, your mashal, that a king and a servant doesn't apply to us. The analogy when it comes to Jews is a father and a son. So when so the Ani is the child of God. So when we come and feed one of the children of God, even though God made him poor, God's happy that we're alleviating his pain, because God doesn't want to see any of his children suffer. So what do you see from this? Rabbi Akiva understood that we're considered children. And if you read the Gemara further, the Gemara clearly says that Rabbi Akiva said they're considered children even when they're not behaving properly. So I just had a simple question then. So how could then Rabbi Yehuda argue on his rabbi? I don't want to go into history, but it's a very simple answer. You could say that could be they had this argument before they became his students. They had this argument when they were learning. Once they became students of Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Akiva gave the ruling, that's why could they be posek like Rabbi Meir in this case? Because even Rabbi Akiva agrees to the opinion of Rabbi Meir, and maybe even Rabbi Yehuda, when he heard it from his rabbi, it could be at the end, you know, maybe acquiesce. We don't have record of that. But that's my point of this Shita Rabbi Akiva, that the Jewish people are considered the children of God regardless. Now we see an amazing story. Everybody always asks, how did Yitzhak like Esav so much? Why did he like Esav so much? Why did he give him so much kavod? Why does he want to give him the blessings? How come he got fooled by him? Who's talking from the mouth of Esav? Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva's voice comes out and he asks, there are certain Jews that are considered like straw. Straw has little value. The straw is tevin, it's hay. It's food for the animals. Melach is something that's bitter on its own, especially when it's not mixed up with food. These are inferior products when they stand alone. I found one text that makes one change in the question that Esav asked his father. I told you, kesad me'asirin et ha-melach. Kesad me'asirin et ha-tevin. But I found in one text that he asked the following question. Ketzad metakenin et ha-tevin. How do you fix the tevin? V'ketzad metakedin. How do you fix the melach? Now, according to that, it's quite possible to say that Yitzhak Avinu sees Esav, and all of a sudden he hears this question, Daddy, how do we fix the Jews that are like Tevin? How do we fix the Jews that are like Melach, that are not Osei Ritzono Shel Makom? Yitzhak Avinu says, this is the Shita of Rabbi Akiva, that a child is a child no matter what. Therefore the Pasuk says, V'yehav Yitzhak et Esav, even if he's not observing the proper way. But Rabbi Akiva's opinion is, a child is a child. Kitzayin befid, because he heard the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, Ketzad betakenim et amela, Ketzad betakenim. So what was his mistake? Rivka knew one thing that Yitzhak didn't. Esav is not on the status of a child of Yitzhak. There's only one child that this rule applies to, and that's Yaakov Avinu. She had a prophecy. Without that prophecy, Yitzhak is not wrong. She had a prophecy that said, Yitzhak Avinu has one son that has this rule. It must come from Yaakov. Now watch what she does. This says from the Tzaddikim, and we'll conclude with this. This is incredible what she did. Rivka Avinu, so wise. Yaakov, go get the blessings. Go get the blessings. But my father wants to give the blessings to Esav. It's true. He thinks that Esav is still considered a ben, banim mashaitim, banim le'umimbam, shitat Rabbi Akiva. But it's not. He has no status. Esav is a goy. The status doesn't apply to him. It applies to you, but it applies to me that yes, Yaakov, even if your children are not going to be behaving, the blessings are on Klal Yisrael no matter what. Klal Yisrael can never lose the status. By the way, that's what the Goyim said. Don't you know what the basis of the Goyim is? The basis of the Goyim is that the Jewish people were the children of God. They angered him, and God forsaken them and took a different child. That's what they say. I know it's a Torah class. The New Testament is based on that. That we agree. There was Har Sinai. Jewish people were chosen. All that stuff. But God abandoned his son because of delinquency and took a new son. What I'm telling you now is so fundamental. That's the whole argument between the two religions. And we come along and say, no, we halachas like Rabbi Meir, like Rabbi Akiva. Banim mashchitim, banim le'umun bam. It's just interesting to note. They call their Bar Minan, their Mashiach, whatever they call Yeshua, which is incidentally the same letters of Esav. That's what they believe. That's Esav is the father of Yeshua, of that belief that once there's Banim, it's Mashchitim, they lose their status. In any event, what happens? Rivka says, we want to get the blessings. But I want your father to give us the blessings, not when you appear as Yaakov. Because if we appear as Yaakov, everybody agrees you deserve the blessings. I want you to get the blessings when you appear like Esav. By putting on those clothes over there, we establish the principle that even if Klal Yisrael Chas V'Shalom behaves with some of the behavior of Esav, it's too late. V'yiten lecha ha'elohim mitala shamesh v'na'az. Klal Yisrael can never lose the status that they have. That was the deep intent of Rivka Imenu, making sure that Yaakov appears not in his perfect state. If he appears in the perfect, then the blessings are only when we're perfect. But throughout the generations, Klal Yisrael is going to go through difficulty. And it's what happened. It doesn't mean that God's not going to punish. Bar Minan. But even after all the punishments, we're still here. He didn't redeem us for a new nation. He didn't say, you've sinned, I punish you, and now I'm taking Bar Minan, the Goyim, I'm taking your brothers. No. At that moment over there, when Yaakov comes dressed as Esav, that establishes the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, not for the Goyim, But it established the opinion of Rabbi Akiva by us. Now, it's interesting to note, where does Esav start? He starts in, where does Rabbi Akiva start? In the Sayyid Befiv, in Esav. That's the Nitzotz. Of course, he jumps over. He jumps over to our side, to Yaakov. That's why they called him Rabbi Akiva. Akiva is the exact same letters as Yaakov. In order to hint to us, that's what they say in the prayers. We say, "Anenu Abir Yaakov." Abir Yaakov is Otiyot Rabbi Akiva, which hints to us that was the Gilgul of Rabbi Akiva. It started from Esav and it moved over to Yaakov eventually, and that's what he heard. So therefore, he wasn't fooled. He wasn't fooled at all. He heard amazing things coming out of Esav. The only mistake was that he thought that he is that status of Banim Mashchitim. And Rivka said, I have a prophecy that Banim Mashchitim begins with Yaakov. And that's why he comes in as dressed up as Banim Mashchitim. He comes in dressed up as Esav. And Afal Pichen, Yitzhak says, even as such, V'yitin necha Elohim, mital ha-shamayim, u'mishmaneh ha-ares, ורוב דגן ותירוש, אמן ואמן.